And do you know how many people would probably, like, run away at the sight of dismembered legs?
Yeah. Dude, there's a 4-foot bong and a bag of wheat by your bed.
Tiddlywinks, the parlor game for nerds, is nearing extinction.
It's in my pot! It's in my pot!
I will find proof.
I'm very easily startled, Mr. Fingerman. I don't know which regulation body would regulate the penis ring that you were talking about earlier.
I'm ready to remain conscious as we record this show.
Hey, welcome to Medical Stuff. My name is Mark Sick Burn Frankum, and that is Chris. Dude, you have no idea what you're talking about. Fingerman's sitting right over there. He has returned triumphantly from the wars. Or from vacation, depending on how you want to look at it. Oh, you're going to do that to me, are you? Actually, on last week's podcast, I start like you're there, and I'm like, oh, crap. You can fake it all you want. They can hear you breathing.
Damn it. Yeah. I hope people think that you finally just lost it. Right. That you're finally just...
Recording from the asylum is
he's just
medical stuff.
Sitting down, talking to himself.
Make him question whether you were actually a person at any point.
Oh, you know what? We didn't do... Hang on. Give me a quick 5 seconds.
How long is 5 seconds? That long?
Yeah, that's long enough. That's long. That's all I'm getting.
What was the comment on Facebook about toast?
About toast?
Somebody talked about, oh, I was going to show it to you. I have to look it up before the next episode.
Yeah.
But, yeah, somebody made a comment about the toast. Not in a bad way, like in a real positive kind of going along with it kind of way.
Oh, did someone else get the toast?
No, I have to look it up now. I'm going to shut up now because I really have no better information than what I've said. And it's not bringing anything to the conversation. So
no, not really.
So this evening's topic.
Burns.
Burns. And we're not talking about, you know, dropping a mic on somebody after you burn them, man. Because I'm hipping from the streets like that.
Yeah. That's Mark's attempt at youth.
But we're talking about physical burns, things that burn you, things that go burny in the night.
Things that burn your heart.
or your skin.
Yeah.
If it's burning your heart, there's probably bigger issues here anyway.
Yeah, also known as a fourth degree burn.
It goes straight through to your heart.
So burns. This actually kind of came up. I recently taught a PHTLS class. It stands for pre-hospital traumatic life support.
Traumatic or trauma?
Trauma life support.
Okay.
Yeah. No, your life support should not be traumatic. but I do got to tell you, Mark, about something that happened. And this is actually a pretty amazing thing that happened. I was teaching at our local agency
that
where we work. Yeah, I know. That is amazing.
Yeah.
And in the hallways, I was walking down and someone who is a listener, who I'm terribly sorry, I didn't catch your name. But they were coming by and they said, hey, are you Fingerman? Now, the immediate thing that goes in my head is, crap, the on-duty supervisor isn't in the building.
Right.
They have recognized me as a supervisor. I'm
right.
Just trying to
go. Oh, no. If you're anywhere in the vicinity, regardless of what you're wearing or not wearing,
yeah,
people will come up to you like you're on duty and start talking to you about stuff that's going on.
Oh, exactly.
And not giving you any information other than, hey, dude, what are you going to do about this?
Yeah. And you're sitting there, it's like, do you think it's casual Friday? Like, what do you think's going on right now? I'm in Romeo's jeans and a t-shirt, given it's an EMS t-shirt, but still. But anyway, and I was thinking that was because it already happened a few times. And I think as that was happening, and I feel so bad. I wasn't rude, but I felt bad because
you
she said,
the fuck off.
Well, she said it. No, not quite. She goes, hey, are you Fingerman? And I said, yeah, I'm actually, you know, I'm trying to actually get out of here. She goes, no, I just, you're on the podcast, right? And I was
and
like,
you completely changed demeanor at that moment.
Completely. I was like, yeah.
Bask in my greatness.
And then she says this, and it melts my heart, and I've been riding off this high for a while. She says, it's kind of like talking to a celebrity.
Oh, I hate right. you just a little bit right now.
I loved it.
Oh.
I loved it. So if you're listening to this episode, thank you. That warmed my heart for days. Well, a day. Actually, it was 2 day. But still, for hours. For hours, my heart's been warm.
Still warming. Still warming.
That's like a baked potato in there. It takes a while. There's a comedian once that he enjoys baked potatoes so much, sometimes he just throws one in the oven just because it'll take a while to get baked and he might be hungry for one when he's by the time it's done.
Who is this?
That's some comedian. You know, that one, the funny one.
You know, it could happen by the time you get there, so.
Yeah. Anyway, so burned.
Burning.
So, according to the World Health Organization, a burn. The who? Exactly. The who.
Who?
are you?
What were the World Health Organization?
A burn is an injury to any tissue caused by heat or due to radiation, radioactivity, electricity, friction, or contact with chemicals. Ooh. Yeah, technically speaking, a burn occurs when water molecules are removed from tissue in a manner that is destructive to the tissue.
So when you talk about electricity, it would be like shuffling your feet on shag carpet and then touching a doorknob?
You do it enough. I also want to point that out is when it says it's removed from water. So one of the things that wasn't mentioned is if ice or what extreme cold can actually cause a burn. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking about the example of like dry ice. Right. This is one of the very rare ways that people actually end up in the ER with burns, because usually you grab dry ice and immediately let go and yeah, it burns, but
way it works, you have a second or two to let go before it actually burns you.
Right, exactly. And you'll realize that.
The residual heat from your skin will actually create a small barrier for a short period of time.
Yeah. Short. Yeah. And so it was actually, there's a guy out there, he does some competitive...
ice touching?
No, it's actually, it's the nerd in me is competitive overclocking. So if you have a computer, you can overclock it to run faster than its specs.
You're going
to
need your glasses, push your glasses up on your nose a little bit and talk a little more nasally.
And and the way they cool these things is actually by using liquid nitrogen. And so this one guy's trying to show someone how to do it, and he's wearing like big gloves. He goes, dude, don't wear gloves. So what'll happen is the liquid nitrogen will soak into the glove and stay on your hand. Mm-hmm. He goes, watch what happens if you just have your bare hand. Pours liquid nitrogen on it.
Bounces right off.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Probably explains the change, the differences in our physique, but have you ever seen him make like ice cream with liquid nitrogen?
Yes, I have.
You know,
yeah,
stuff like that.
So, but anyway, so and one of the things that can happen too is when your hand gets extremely cold, again, water molecules get disrupted in a way that is destructive to the tissue.
Right.
Would
you consider frostbite a type of freezer burn?
So frostbite itself is typically due to, and correct me if I'm wrong, but frostbite is actually due to lack of circulation. What ends up happening is you get vasoconstriction and you lose blood flow to the end, and that causes tissue death, I believe, is frostbite. So I'm not sure if that's – I don't think that technically qualifies as a type of burn.
By the vasoconstriction, you're pushing water out of the cells.
That's true, and then eventually, I mean, it will get cold enough that that'll happen.
We're going to say yes, prove us wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the internet is there to help.
Right. So burns can be life-changing, they can be life-ending, or they can be incredibly minor. Burns are categorized not only by the type, but by the depth.
Each I think most people think of life-changing, they think of for a positive.
Yeah, I'm not going that direction.
No, not at all.
I'm going like, disability type direction. So types of burns, degree/depth. So a lot of people probably heard the terms like first, second, third degree burns.
No longer used.
Yeah, it's not. We actually now call it superficial, partial thickness, or full thickness, or even more recently.
First base, second base, third base.
No.
Which puts a whole different spin on.
Oh, God.
Teenage making out.
Oh, Jesus. Which burning should not be involved.
It may afterwards if they're with the wrong person.
If it is, go see your doctor.
Exactly.
We have.
Glad to see even after a break, our level of stupidity has not improved.
No. Actually, if anything, the stupidity has improved. It's the intelligence that hasn't.
Good point.
You end up with. They've modified it a little bit since then, too, is they now have superficial partial thickness, or superficial burns, partial thickness burns, partial thickness deep partial burns, and full thickness, with deep partial and full thickness being that third degree.
Or third base.
In order to really, and then what's a home run? Like, is that just it's obliterated? You're in an ashtray. That's where you
carbonization, where you just like take the whole limb off.
There you go. So before we can really explain in depth what the burns are, I'm going to talk a little bit about the skin, because really the depth of a burn is determined by how far it gets down in the skin. So your skin has several layers. The top layer, the part that you see,
like a dip.
Yeah, like a dip. Like a good dip.
Like a seven-layer dip.
Yeah. The top part that you see is the epidermis. So that's your tougher cells. A lot of your epidermis is made up of dead cells. Mm-hmm. Those are compacted. They're squamous cells. For anyone that's in school that's looking at the different types of swells, cells.
Squamous or squamous?
I say squamous.
Okay.
Anyway, they're compact. They're meant to be durable. They don't really house much in the way of vasculature or nerves or anything like that.
They're more protective than anything else. They're meant to take damage, and you don't care about them because they're dead.
Yeah. And so beneath that is the dermis. So the dermis is a layer of skin that is layer of skin, obviously, beneath the epidermis. And it houses some nerve endings, not a whole lot. Houses some capillaries in there. And so when you get you actually get a lot of your sensation is actually what happens to the dermis, not really the epidermis.
Like your goosebumps.
Yeah.
Or tickling.
Yeah.
Like, airflow across your arms and stuff like that.
And also like hair follicles. Mm-hmm. Hair follicles are
anchored in the dermis.
I'm going to take a sip of water. Hang on.
Okay. So, yeah, your hair follicles are
this is what that sounds like. Hang on, everybody.
Thank God we're staying on topic. Hang on.
So satisfactory.
I can feel the numbers dropping as you do.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so beneath the dermis, you have the hypodermis. So the hypodermis is kind of the anchoring layer. There's connective tissue there. It's adipose or fat is right there. That's kind of what anchors your dermis onto the tissue beneath it, which would be your muscles and, yeah.
Tendons and bones.
And that kind of fun stuff.
Mahoozy whatsits.
Yeah. So superficial burns. This is a burn.
They really don't know much. They're conversationalists. You know, they're worried about style rather than substance.
Oh, God. And you sit there and try and talk about politics. You get nowhere.
Yeah, nothing.
Jesus. Jesus. Superficial burns. This is a burn that only impacts the epidermis, the most superficial layer of skin. A common example of this is a sunburn. Go outside, get a little red. That is a good example of a first-degree burn.
Or a lot red, depending.
Yeah.
Well, would you ever see a show called Naked and Afraid, I think it was called, where the two people, like, meet for the first time?
But they're naked?
Yeah.
Yeah, and a little afraid.
Well, no, they're put into a survival situation for 21 days.
Mm-hmm.
And they get dropped off separately, and they meet down at a point, mm-hmm. right? But before when they get dropped off and out of the vehicle, they strip down to nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing, except, like, a satchel with one item in it. And that's how they meet each other.
Yeah.
And there was one, it was on a South Pacific island.
Yeah.
And they were on one little island, which didn't have many resources. And there was a bigger island, maybe a quarter mile, half mile away, swim.
Yeah.
Maybe sharks in the water.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Can't really stay here. Don't really want to have to get there. But anyway, they decide, look, we have to get over there. So they take a chance. And I believe the sharks probably weren't man-eating. You'd think that probably the show would not.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck. short, like 45 minutes, this guy is burned from like head to toe.
Oh, geez.
To the point, and so for like the next 3 days, he's just incapacitated, essentially, trying to hide from the sun while he goes through this full body burn.
Yeah.
I mean, taint and everything.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Yeah, the sun is terrible, and the water actually doesn't help you. A lot of people think it does when you're underwater, but I believe I've heard somewhere. Yeah, I'm not even going to say that because that's just something my dad told me a long time ago.
No, if you're in the water, you can actually the problem with being underwater is did he tell you it magnifies it?
Yeah.
I don't think it does that so much as you don't realize it's burning.
Yeah.
Because you're in the cool water.
That makes sense.
And so you're in and out of the sun. There's no real consistent coverage there.
Yeah.
So.
Like we've said, the skin's going to be red and painful. It'll peel in the coming days. If you've seen that, it just looks like a snake skin peeling. It's kind of, every time I get a sunburn and it starts peeling, I try and peel it off in the biggest single sheet that I possibly can. I don't know why.
To edit your collection of skin you've got in the garage.
Yeah, of course. Only I got to make a shirt out of it.
Right.
And yeah, now on sale, Chris Finkston skin coats.
Hey, if you want to have some fun,
yeah.
Look up Ed Gein.
Okay.
And he made clothing out of human skins.
Oh, cool.
To make himself a woman.
That's normal. So superficial burns are rarely complicated or life-threatening. But it is important to note that someone with a substantial first-degree burn, superficial burn, can have...
Look how it says substantial. It says okay. This is the superficial burn section, and they use the term first-degree.
I did, you mean.
No, it's written right there. Substantial first-degree burn covering.
I wrote it, yeah.
Oh, did you type it?
Yeah, I type all this stuff.
Oh.
Anyway.
Moving on.
Covering most of their body and can have other complications. In the case of a sunburn that covers most of the body, the patient may have been exposed to heat for too long and could be potentially dehydrated as well. Consider the drunken beachgoer. In some cases, even if the burn is superficial, blistering can occur. Anytime that a blister is broken, that leaves an opening for infection. Enough blistering will lead to fluid loss. Now, one of the common misconceptions is that all sunburns are superficial. That's not true. Mm-mm. You can be sunburned to a partial thickness burn. Mm-hmm. And if you start seeing, while it is true that technically burns that do not penetrate the epidermis may cause some blistering, it's very, very rare. And more likely what you're looking at is a partial thickness burn.
Right.
I would never, if you're out in the field, I would, if I see a blister, I'm going to assume it's partial thickness.
Right.
So.
Well, also, I mean, the thing is, we talk about how they're rarely life-threatening.
Yeah.
But if you have repeated exposures, it actually increases your chance, especially as a child or an infant, increases your chance for skin cancer later in life.
Absolutely. UV exposure.
So.
So, let's talk a little bit about, I also want to address something called sun poisoning. This just kind of came up in the.
When you drink too much sun.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, drinking any sun really would kill you outright. So sun poisoning, it's a buzzword that kind of refers to some flu-like symptoms that occur after a severe sunburn. It doesn't really have much to do with the burn itself necessarily. You're not actually being poisoned, obviously, but instead the widespread tissue damage can trigger an immune response from the body. Because your body's pretty good at being like, hey, the skin's not intact. Histamines get released as part of an immune response because the body's preparing for this essentially broken barrier that it now has. Mm-hmm. And so this can cause some vasodilation. This causes a drop in blood pressure. Not a lot. This is some minor stuff. I'm not talking like you're going into shock here. But this can lead to fatigue and lightheadedness and even some nausea. So that's where the sun poisoning or the sun flu comes from. So treatment, what do you do with superficial burns? Well,
go out in the sun. It's like hair of the dog, right?
Yeah, you know, exactly. You know,
if you drink too much, you drink some more the next morning to get over the hangover. If you get sunburned, you go straight back out in the sun because it'll help you get over it.
Yeah, so don't do that. That is one of the things.
Homeopathy.
Well, no, you have to dilute the sun first.
Oh, good point.
So go back. Yeah, yeah, so go in the shade for a while.
get under a very fine piece of cloth.
Yeah, there you go. So treatment of the superficial burn is going to include mostly topical ointments.
Aloe vera.
Not most. Yes, aloe vera. The ointments are going to be centered mostly around pain relief. Mm-hmm. These ointments typically contain lidocaine. It helps numb the skin. Aloe vera is what Mark just mentioned.
Or some type of cane.
Yeah.
Benzocaine or
yeah.
Lanocaine.
Yeah, the one that starts with an M that I don't remember but has a cane at the end. Anyway, WHO, World Health Organization, recommends taking a cool but not cold shower or applying ice packs to the painful area to reduce some of the swelling that might occur.
Well, that seems counter statement.
What do you mean? Oh, ice. Well, yeah. Not cold, but then do ice pack.
Cold shower. But yeah, I guess if you're doing an ice pack, it's going to be
localized.
It's going to be localized, not systemic, like jumping into a cold shower. And right. The reason they don't is because they don't want you to become hypothermic.
Right. And also, staying hydrated is important as well when dealing with burn.
So go jump in the water.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Drink it all.
Okay. So partial thickness burns. Partial thickness burns are burns that extend into the dermis. The party layer of the skin is where everything's going on, man.
Woo!
The layer just beneath the epidermis, but outside of the hypodermis. The dermis houses small blood vessels, hair roots, some nerve endings. Partial thickness burns can be very painful and produce blisters. So recently I took a blacksmithing class, right? Last day, last 5 minutes of the class, there was a very nice young lady. She's very interesting. She's been doing 52 weeks of learning things. So she, like, one week went and did woodworking. 1 week went and made pencils. 1 week went and learned how to glass blow. And this was her last one, which was blacksmithing.
Wow.
Literally the last 5 minutes. So whenever at the blacksmith shop, there was a table. It's called the hot table. It's on that table. It's hot.
Okay.
Right. She quenched her last project.
Yep.
She put it on the table. Give it a minute. Some other guy came up and put his right beside hers. So she did not know this. He had moved away, everything like that. So she wasn't paying attention. He had not quenched his tool. She picked it up. Almost immediately got second-degree burns on all her fingertips.
Yeah.
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 Which is no good.
No good.
One way to help diagnose partial thickness burns is to tug on hairs that may remain in the affected area. If the hair is easily pull free, so basically you've done damage to the hair roots.
Right.
And so.
Because the hair roots reside in the dermis.
Right. Now, if they're coming up through a blister, I wouldn't do that.
Right.
Because you don't want to pop blisters. Mm-hmm. There's an urge for people to pop blisters because they're painful, they're irritating, But the blister is there for a reason.
Yeah.
And it's to protect the skin while the skin below it is healing.
Because the body, it's going to reabsorb that fluid.
Right.
It's going to reabsorb that fluid. And if you break that blister, you also got to think, you're just making a hole for infection.
Right, because this, the reason for the blister is the skin below it is not able to protect you.
Yeah.
And so if you pop that blister, like Chris said, anything that goes into that blister through that hole is now on the clean skin,
yeah,
on the raw skin. So if you pull the hair free, probably a second-degree burn because you've then burned the roots.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind that any hair will come out if you pull hard enough.
And don't grab somebody by the hair and just start running.
And also, I've heard this before, and I've been on patients with second-degree burns. That's never been the determining factor for me to be like.
You should know. It's yeah, pretty obvious before this.
It's the blister that's going to be the determining factor. And the other thing, too, is it's a pretty finite scenario that something will cause a second-degree burn on the skin and not remove the hair outright anyway.
Right. Yeah, it's probably going to be burned off.
Yeah. Now,
have you played odd or even?
What's that?
Have you ever played odd or even?
No.
Walk up to somebody, pinch them with their hair, pull, mm-hmm, and then they say odd or even, and they have to guess if there's an odd number of hairs and an even number of hairs in your fingers.
Jesus Christ, seems like a pain in the ass to count the hairs.
Well, usually it's not that many.
That's true. It depends how big of a dick you are, really.
That's a good point.
Take like a handful.
Okay, bang, bang. Treatment will largely depend on the area involved. Partial thickness burns that are small, under 2 inches of diameter, may be treated at home. If you have any doubts, go see a doctor.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we're talking, I mean, if there's blisters, stuff like that, it doesn't hurt to at least call your primary care physician and let them know what's going on. They may want you to come get checked out. And it also depends on where it is.
Right, exactly.
A small 2-inch burn on your face, regardless of the size of it, if it's a partial thickness or anything, go see a doctor, probably an emergency room doctor.
I'd also say your hands as well, because that can greatly affect your quality of life.
Genitalia?
Yeah, genitalia.
Genitalia, I mean, that's going to hurt.
Right.
Depending on the person, you won't be able to do the hair test. Really? Crickets on that one?
Sorry, what'd you say? Oh, gotcha. That was actually pretty funny. That took me a while.
Like, wow, man, that was like probably the most 14-year-old boy thing I've said today, and Chris didn't even look at me.
Yeah.
So for these small burns, running cold water, cool but not freezing cold, over the burn is advisable. It'll diminish the area of the burn because it cools off the skin. It'll feel better while it's under the water. And then covering the burn is only necessary if the burn is in an area where it may come in contact with clothing, or if an open blister exists. A lot of the pain that comes, when you put a bandage on a burn, it's going to hurt briefly. Where a lot of the pain comes from on second degree burns is like air or clothing or something else moving across that area.
Yeah.
And it's very angry to begin with. The nerve endings and everything are very, very sensitive.
Yeah.
And so, yes, put the bandage on there, put a proper ointment of some form, something that will keep it from sticking, and then cover that up. Cover the burn with a clean, dry bandage, but only so tight that the bandage stays put. A bandage that is too tight may cause additional skin damage to blisters or skin. Do not break the blisters if possible. They will reabsorb over time, and the blister will open up when it's ready.
Yeah.
Here in a little bit, do you go into what to not put on a burn?
We don't. I don't remember.
Well, things like, old wives' tales.
Oh, yeah.
Butter. Never put butter on a burn. It actually makes it worse.
Don't put oils.
I went on a call. I get there and fire is just dumping sailing bag after sailing bag after sailing bag on this patient.
Severe burn patient?
Face and chest, pot of boiling oil.
Severe burn patient. Yeah, that's shit.
I mean, but then they're literally just slicing it open, handing it off. Slicing one open, handing it off, right?
Jesus.
And I'm like, do you want to, we're here. Do you want to get going? The firefighter turns around, and it's one of those times when they have a little bit of attitude in their voice, but you know it's not directed at you.
Yeah.
We're trying to wash all off the egg.
Oh, Jesus.
They had dumped raw egg.
Oh, my Lord.
On this person's burns. I looked at him, I go, what, they run out of butter? He goes, I know. There was literally cooked piece of egg on her shirt when we got to the hospital.
Well,
God. Eggs are extremely bacteria-ridden.
And it's food.
Right.
It's food.
Yeah.
Here's the biggest problem with burns, especially when you start shoving butter and bullshit in there, biggest problem with burns is you're talking about a big issue with your immune system. That is a part that's just not working out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part that's exposed, I should say. And we'll talk about some fluid loss later, but anytime you start rubbing an oil-based product like butter or oil, like vegetable oil.
Yeah, canola oil, olive oil.
Yeah, or eggs, apparently. You're just making bacteria playground.
You are, and also with the butter, the oils in the butter and the oils in the oil will actually enclose that and keep the heat in.
Oh, God, that's
so,
never good.
No, so you run the water over it so that it'll cool the area where this, it can actually make the burn go deeper by putting these things on it.
Yeah. So partial thickness burns, or blistering burns that we're talking about here. A lot of the times, not necessarily life-threatening. However, if the partial thickness burn covers more than 30% of the surface area of the body, we'll talk a little bit more about that later, it has substantial potential to be lethal. And here's why. So second-degree burns can cause a lot of fluid displacement. So those blisters, that is full of fluid that would otherwise be used for something else. Your body doesn't keep blister fluid on standby for only blisters. It's basically pulling water, and that's all it is. That is water that has been heated and rose to the surface of the skin, destroying skin along the way and just not making it out of the epidermis. And happens to form a, it happens to have a function as well. But regardless, blisters, that fluid that's in them, that's fluid that would otherwise be used for blood volume. And if that fluid volume is not in your blood, then you can become hypovolemic, just the same as if you had a hemorrhage or a cut or a wound.
Yeah. And like you said, we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but fluid replacement.
Yeah.
Very important.
Very important. Actually, there's some formulas we'll discuss in a little bit about exactly about how much fluid someone should get. But that is one of the main problems with a lot of secondary burns is going to be fluid displacement. And you're going to have a big fluid shift. And obviously, the more burns and blisters you have, the more susceptible to infection. If you want to know just how nasty infection can get, check out our sepsis episode. Infection can cause.
Did you hear the Spencer episode where he wasn't letting me do callbacks?
He wasn't letting you do callbacks? Oh, he wasn't?
He was letting me be like, da-da-da-da-da-da every time I tried to do a callback to another episode.
Does he not like him?
Oh, no. He was just screwing with me.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha.
And so he was just trying to assert himself.
Trying to get him out to go snowboarding here in a little bit.
Don't drive his car.
Oh, what's wrong with this? Oh, yeah. And if you want to know that story.
Go back to medical myth too.
So, right. So that fluid's important. So also a partial thickness burn will be accompanied by some swelling, just like superficial burns. If a burn goes entirely around the limb, we call that a circumferential burn. A circumferential burn can cut off venous return because the swelling acts like a tourniquet. Now, this is a lot more rare to occur in partial thickness burns for two reasons. One, the swelling in partial thickness burns is not as much as, say, a partial deep or full thickness, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But also the heat source. A lot of times you get a circumferential burn because you have a heat source that's so intense on one side of the arm, it's kind of able to burn both sides, or you have something like a flame or open flame that somebody's in. That is when you'll get a burn that goes all the way around. And that's going to more likely, more often be a deeper style burn, like the full part or deep partial or full thickness burns. So it's kind of rare that you'd have a mechanism that would create a circumferential partial thickness burn.
Unfortunately.
But it can happen.
The one I've seen them, unfortunately, have been child abuse cases.
And that's that is unfortunately the next step. Where you'll see that is where very, very shitty people will dip children in boiling hot bathtubs. And that's where you get circumferential partial thickness burns. And that's where you get some problems there because essentially acts as a tourniquet. And it and what it does is it occludes in a partial thickness burn. It typically occludes venous return because you usually don't have enough swelling to cut off arterial. But this creates a problem. So you have blood going in, but no blood going out. And well, so you
we've discussed before arterial pressure is under pressure, whereas venous pressure is more passive.
Yeah, exactly.
And so any sort of restriction on the venous side of it, you're just going to get even more swelling in that area.
Yeah. And what's going to happen is metabolic processes like, you know, the burning of
Processitation.
Metabolic processitation is basically going to be, so for example, like your cells consume glucose as energy. That's going to produce waste. So all these little skin cells and muscle cells, I almost said meat cells, but whatever, are going to.
It's not wrong.
That's where the meat of the baby is. Anyway, so. I'm sorry. So this is still going to be produce. It's going to produce a lot of waste. It's going to produce lactic acid being a big, one of the big things. And so one of the things you have to worry about when you have a huge lactic acid buildup that's not returning is all of a sudden they go in and they'll do like an incision that actually allows – it actually allows more swelling. But because it allows more room for swelling, it takes pressure off those veins. Well, now that blood that's full of lactic acid comes raging back to the system again. And what that does is it changes the blood pH. And we've talked about blood pH. And that range is very, very small, 7.35 to 7.45. You throw a bunch of acid in there, it's going to lower that pH, and that can be lethal just in and of itself.
Well, we've talked about this, I mean, in other circumstances. We've talked about it with...
like crush injuries.
Crush injuries, or there was a reason we stopped using mass pants.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much making things like that.
Because it was pretty much making a crush injury?
Well, it was restricting, it was building up the lactic acids and all the waste products in the extremities.
Yeah.
Which when you deflated it and blood started flushing through to that area, it already gets dumped back into a very sick system, you know.
And that's never good.
No, and it's such a rush. So what's the name of the incision?
Well, we actually talk about that in a little bit. Okay, it kind of depends on exactly what's going on, but okay. Escharotomy is one of them.
Okay.
Oh, no, Mark. You want to do it now.
I doubted your competence.
What is actually – because escharotomy is one of them. That's only if there's escher. What's the other one again?
I don't know. I haven't found that yet.
Okay.
Really, all I had was escharotomy.
Okay, gotcha. Well,
do you escharotomy on escargot?
I think you could. Mm-hmm. Spell it a little bit.
Depends different. If you
burn it or not. Right, that's true. So, cut. Alrighty, move it along. Okay. I got to the end of that sentence, but talk about compartment syndrome, lactic acid, and blah. So moving on to the big bad one, the deep partial / full thickness burn.
Is this one that's encompassing nearly full thickness of the skin, both the epidermis and well into the dermis, leaving only the adipose tissue and connective tissue layers of the skin known as the hypodermis?
Yeah, and then the full thickness burn is actually going to include that connective tissue and adipose tissue as well. Little pain is actually felt in these areas. Why is that, Mark?
Because when you're wounded that deep, it just becomes overwhelming and your brain shuts out the pain.
Or...
you burned all the nerve endings, so there's nothing to hurt.
Ding, 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 ding.
Or a combination thereof.
So I'm actually going to steal a story. I'm going to steal a story from one of my students today. I guess you could say that one of my students because I taught, you know, part of a PhD LS class.
Yeah, you like two modules.
I did one module. Jesse did the other. But anyway, so... Right. So
a great educator over here.
Yes. But he actually shared a really good story. It was from earlier on in his career. It was a guy who was welding on a gas tank. Oddly enough, he became a burn patient.
What?
Yeah. So blew his garage up, blew him up. And they get there and the guy's sitting outside of his garage, head to toe burnt. He said probably 90% full thickness burns.
Probably going to die.
He did. Absolutely did. But he's conscious and talking.
But it was a long, painful death, more than likely.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was conscious alert, mm-hmm. smoking a cigarette, complaining that it's getting hard to breathe.
What's it going
to
do? Kill you?
Right. Again? Yeah. I don't think the cancer's going to catch up to you. Smoking a cigarette, complaining that it's hard to breathe. And the only places he had pain were his butt crack and his foot. Mm. The two places that had the least amount of burns,
right.
Butt crack and foot.
Well, apparently he had more butt than you have.
Right, exactly.
Because your back just splits into two legs, essentially.
Yeah, it pretty much does.
Just really the only definition is your wallet.
Yeah. No, actually, I've been trying to get a little booty.
Have you?
Yeah, I've been working out a little bit. Okay. Yeah, something squeezed
back
there.
What are you doing to actually... what exercises are you doing to get booty?
Walking on an incline, the treadmill. There's actually a... I'm going to describe our studio. Air quote sound.
Mm.
Yeah. Our studio looks pretty studio-ish until you like pan over to where there's just a treadmill crammed in the corner.
Well, it's kind of like when you look at a realtor's pictures. You're like, man, that's an amazing house. And you go see it and you're like, this thing's a matchbox.
Yeah.
From the right angle, we have a cool-looking studio.
Oh, yeah. That's all those photos are from the best angle I can find. And if you don't think it's cool from those angles, then it doesn't get better. anyway.
Literally top shelf.
Yeah, that's the best I got. So anyway, so we have the treadmill there and I've been doing that. So it's my stuff. Actually work out now like regularly.
Is it a booty mill?
A booty mill? I don't know. Anyway, so today's episode is all about Chris Fingston's booty. All right, so back to deep back to deep partial.
Well, his butt cheeks and his foot, the probably the only areas that didn't, he says only didn't.
Oh, yeah. And they ended up starting an IV in the guy's foot. And we'll come back to this story later because they ended up taking care of his airway too, which was a big deal. Mm-hmm. So what is a full thickness burn going to look like? Well,
did they do blow by cigarette smoke?
Exactly. All right, sir. You need this. So the thing about this skin is it's not going to have any elasticity. Your skin's actually typically very, very stretchy until apparently you burn it to a crisp and it's not stretchy anymore.
Well, then it's now a steak.
Yeah, exactly. So the deep partial thickness, that's going to be white and leathery or sometimes brown. Full thickness may appear black and create something called escher or esker. So
hence the term escherotomy.
Yeah. And hot dog description. This came from another student who was in the same class because I asked the class. I'm like, all right, guys, what is esker? Who knows?
Are you going to ruin hot dogs for all of us?
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, not for all of us. You and I are going to be fine.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway.
That really was the extent of my concern.
Okay, perfect. He gave the most bang-on description of esker ever, and I loved it. And I looked over at – so, I'm actually going to clarify. I was actually being observed to become an instructor. Mm-hmm. And the guy who was observing me, I look over at him. I'm like, that's pretty bang-on. He's like, yeah, no, just – that's it. And then we just moved on. But what it was, he goes, well, esker's like when you're barbecuing a hot dog. And you get the skin a little bit too black to the point to where it cracks itself. Mm. And I'm like, yeah, okay. That's esker. Mm-hmm. So, and esker has a problem with it. And that is that it's not flexible.
Does Esther have a problem with it?
I don't know. I haven't talked to her about it. I think she's a little pissed. But the problem is with esker, and I'll talk a little bit about it later, but if you get esker as a circumferential burn, like we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. or worse yet, it is around someone's chest.
Right.
It will not allow any expansion. Swelling is still going to occur in tissues
pushing
that are
inwards.
Yeah, pushing inwards. And so what they'll actually do is an escherotomy. So that split in the black crackled skin of the hot dog mm-hmm. is essentially what your escherotomy looks like. And it's exactly what they do is they control that split and they mm-hmm. just basically make an incision through the esker to allow for more expansion mm-hmm. and it'll allow the chest to expand and contract.
Right. So, yeah, so, they're creating that V where the swelling can go outwards.
Now, here's the thing. Up until this point, all of the burns we talked about will heal. Eventually, with time, they will heal. The deep partial and the full thickness will not.
Nope. You've killed the actual cell generating area.
Yeah.
Of the body.
So at this point, you need a skin graft.
Right.
That's the only way to get any sort of skin back there. And you will need a skin graft. You can't just not have skin. The process before you get a skin graft can be pretty grueling. They have to do things like debriding because you can't just plop skin over a bunch of dead skin.
People that work in burn centers mm-hmm. are devils and saints all at the same time.
Yeah.
Because they do, I mean, their job is essentially to inflict massive amounts of pain on people where they go and debride these burns mm-hmm. multiple times a day sometimes. They take them in and did you have to do a burn unit rotation?
I did.
Yeah.
I did not see a debridement.
No, you did not.
Did not.
Basically, they load this patient up on insane amount of narcotic pain relievers, mm-hmm. and it still doesn't help.
Yeah.
I mean, without it, it would be impossible to do. But they will go in, and they will literally just take a stiff brush mm-hmm. to this open skin, mm-hmm. and just like they're polishing their boots, just get after it.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other thing that happens is that you'll have to PT will come in. And they will make you bend your knees and your elbows and keep, so everything doesn't tighten up to the point where it locks up. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, just insane amount of pain medication for these people.
Yeah.
Because everything's, as you know, Chris was talking about, everything tightens up with a lack of fluid.
Right.
And so on top of the brushing to clean up the skin and keep it clean, then they will come in and they will do PT where they, you know, lift the thigh, bend the knee, move the ankle, you know, and everything like that to keep everything mobile in the long term. So,
and also, what are the other things? Actually, tell you what. Oh, yeah. So earlier we talked about body surface area, mm-hmm. and we were saying 30% on partial thickness. Well, when we talk about these full thickness burns, because you lose so much fluid, and you lose all the fluid in that area, mm-hmm. we're talking 5 to 10%.
Right.
5% gets you to a burn center. We'll talk that about a little bit later. 10%. We're worried about you dying. 10%, mm-hmm. by the way, is slightly more than your entire arm.
Yeah.
Slightly more. That's it.
Your arm is 9%.
Yeah. We'll talk about that too later on. Mm-hmm. So, Mark, do you want to cover treatment?
Yeah, we treat it. Moving on.
Done.
Treatment is initially a focus on fluid replacement. We'll go over that next, actually, the Parkland formula. And then, do you talk about the other one? There's a Parkland formula and there's another burn formula.
I just hit on Parkland.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you remember the name of the other one?
Fuck no. Open the bag and just run it in formula.
Oh, that's what we do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're losing just mass amounts of fluid. So first thing is fluid replacement. Pain management. Other initial considerations will depend on the location of the burn. If the burns are present in the airway, getting a definitive airway early.
This is why I wanted you to do the treatment section.
So,
you know what? I want to read this.
We'll get to it. No. So, hopefully most of you know about Chris's distaste for the term definitive airway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So while he was gone, Spencer and I's podcast was called Definitive Airway.
Motherfuckers.
And we repeated that term over and over and over throughout the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
So now we come to this where you have to get a definitive airway on a burn patient with airway compromised. And this is followed by parentheses, all caps, the rare time this is fucking relevant, Mark, and parentheses.
So this is the one time. The reason I don't like the term definitive airway is not because it's a dumb term. It's a good term.
It is.
It makes sense. It's used for dumb reasons. It's a lot of times. So here's the thing. I have no problem innovating. Love innovating. It's fun. We have tools nowadays that make it a lot better. Mm-hmm. And all that stuff. I'm decently good at it.
You feel like a true medical professional.
When absolutely.
You're doing something because it is a life-saving technique.
That being said, if it's not needed, I don't want to do it.
Right.
Because it's risky. Because if you screw it up, especially if you're doing something we call RSI, where we're giving a cocktail of medications that basically take the respiratory drive away from somebody, mm-hmm. if you screw that up, you're kind of in a pickle.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's not unrecoverable, but it's a pickle.
It's subpar.
Yeah. And so they say, if we don't got to do it, we don't got to do it. And sometimes I'll ask somebody, it's like, look, why do you want to intubate this patient? Right now, they're breathing fine. They don't need it.
It's that perceived unassailable position.
Yeah. And that unassailable position apparently is just saying, well, we can get a definitive airway. That's not a thing. That is the equivalent of just saying, well, we can get an ET tube. I know we can get an ET tube. I know it's a definitive airway.
For people not in the medical professional, the best I can come up with is, and this is something else that drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. It's not best practices.
Oh, Jesus H. Maloney.
So this is something that's thrown around in the corporate place. Well, we don't want to do that because it's not best practices. What that does is it makes it seem like, well, you don't want to be the person to.
You don't want to not, be.
The, you want to do. You don't want to be the person that says we shouldn't do best practices.
You don't want to have an undefinitive airway.
Right? But they never define what best practices are.
Or why.
Right.
Why is this the best practice? Right. Why do you need this?
Exactly. So, however, this would be similar. They want to get the airway because they want to do a tube.
Right.
But they say, well, we want to get a definitive airway because they feel that you're going to be the person that's not going to want to say,
yeah,
no, we shouldn't get a definitive airway because it's seen as substandard.
And actually, I want to point out, too, that this I just want to point out, Mark and I occasionally talk about, you know, agencies respond with the fire departments. We love the fire departments. They're actually really good people. No.
The thing is, this is across the board.
Medics. This actually came from a partner that I had that I was arguing with because he really wanted, he told me he thought I should have innovated.
Right.
I'm like, why? And we argued.
Was he a paramedic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He was a senior too. And yeah. And it was not you. But anyway. Because it wouldn't be.
No.
But anyway, but yeah, and he just.
Because with me, there is no argument.
Right, exactly. I just do it. But yeah, it was just one of those things where that the only thing I ever came back to was definitive airway. And I remember just like not yelling, but.
You yelled.
But yelling. Just being like, tell me why that's important. Tell me why that word, that phrase, definitive airway, is important. What about that helps this patient? Because it's just definitive airway, man. I'm just like, God, get the fuck out of it. I hope we crash, and I hope your side of the ambulance gets crushed, and I hope you die. That is what I want.
Not that to me.
I'm just saying he did die, and I'm fine. I'm joking. That didn't happen. But anyway. But
yeah, it's used as a kind of a catch-all to win an argument.
Yeah.
Because they perceive that you're not going to be the one to go, Oh, well, no, I want to take a chance with this person's life.
Yeah, but you know what? I am, so fuck it. But no, so, but okay, but getting back to it. So, but here's the thing, though. What a definitive airway ultimately is it's an endotracheal tube. It's a tube that we pass into the trachea. And here's the nice thing about it is once you have that in there, you have complete isolation and control.
Nothing goes in the airway without going through your tube.
Absolutely. There are other devices that we would call one, for example, it's a king, or what it does is it blocks off the esophagus and then it blocks off the mouth. So the only way left to go is into the trachea, but vomit can still leak around that. You could have trauma within that oropharynx that could still bleed in there. You don't have definitive control of the airway.
Well, in this instance, with the burn patient, you're also providing structure.
And that's the big important thing. So when you have inhalation burns, what ends up happening is, we already talked about swelling. Well, that airway is going to swell, and you have a limited window to get in there and get it done. In the patient I told you about who was welling on a gas tank. So, because the way it came up was someone actually asked, hey, has anyone here ever done a voluntary, done an RSI on a conscious patient due to burns? And he raised his hand and he told this story. And he said, thank God they did. First of all, the only place they found an IV, this was before the time of IOs. Mm-hmm. IOs, by the way, is a drill that literally drills a needle into your bone.
Listen to the IV IO airway or podcast from us.
They actually found an IV in his foot.
Yeah.
And they had to do it, and because it was the only one, which hurt because it was the only place the guy had skin this sensation.
Right. Well, it was butt crack.
Yeah. Well, they didn't want to look for an IV there. So they RSI'd this guy, and he said that when he was going in, it was like he could see the walls clothing. It looked like walls closing, not clothing. It looked like cauliflower.
They were dapper.
Yeah. It looked like cauliflower. He said it looked like just a bunch of cauliflower, and he was just trying to guide in the tube, but he got the tube. Mm-hmm. And they got the tube and they controlled his airway. And the doctor came back and said, had they not gotten that tube,
dead.
Guy would have been dead. And even a surgical crike would not have been possible because it would have all just swelled completely shut. Which actually made him feel bad because the guy just took 2 weeks to die.
Well, yeah.
As opposed to a day.
When you have a burn above,
It's like 60, something like that.
Yeah. If the percentage of burn area.
Full thickness, by the
full
way.
Full thickness. Or even a good deep partial thickness burn over that's if you have more area of your body that's burned than it's not burned, the chance of you surviving that long term because so many other things come along with it.
Yeah.
The infections, the circumferential burns, the lactic acid buildup, the fluid loss, everything else. There's so much going on. The chance of you surviving that's pretty slim.
Yeah. Also, kind of another thing, another oddity here. It's also important to note that you want to keep extremities in their anatomical or functional positions because what's going to happen is this tissue is going to tighten up as it kind of heals. And actually, it happened within the first couple hours. And so, what you don't want to do is have extremities that are all the way extended out and then have that the tissue, like say on a tricep, for example, lock their arm in an extended position.
Right.
You don't want that. You actually kind of want it.
Well, that's why I was talking about earlier. They come and they do the PT. In the burn unit. They come in and force you to move your arms, everything like that, and just to keep that from happening.
Yeah.
So heat loss is also critical on these patients. When you start getting these large, deep burns, the body has no way of retaining heat at that point in those areas. This is why they've gone away from hosing the patients down or putting cold, wet blankets on them.
Yeah.
You now want to keep them dry, get them away from the source. Maybe use small area towels to you know, like right at the burn site, but keep most of the body dry so that you can retain as much heat as possible.
Yeah, and clean is very important.
Keep
things clean. I'm always hesitant to use a sterile from an EMS perspective.
Nothing we do is sterile.
Because technically the book says a dry, sterile dressing. I'm like,
it's sterile until I open the package.
Yeah, and now it is no longer sterile. And the problem is one of the other things too. So if you are an EMS and you're out there, you've probably heard of burn sheets. Be very careful. Go examine the type of burn sheet that you have. Mm-hmm. Basically, burn sheets are just large. They're kept in a sterile package and just a large sheet. If you have a paper-based burn sheet, throw it away. And go find one that is either linen-based or I think it's just linen-based is the only other one. The paper-based ones are old news and physicians hate them because here's the thing. When you get these burns, a lot of fluid's going to displace outside the skin. What happens when you put paper on water?
Bad things. It sticks
breaks,
to it.
It breaks down.
Right.
And that is going to be a nightmare. So please, please, please go check. If you carry burn sheets, go check them. Open them. And make sure they're not paper-based burn sheets, because paper-based burn sheets, do not use them, please.
Well, and the thing is, thankfully, these are things we don't use often. And so it's very easy, especially the old ones that didn't have an expiration date on them.
It'd break down in there.
It'd break down in there. And so you open it up and it's already flaking off.
Yeah.
Well, then you stick that to a patient.
Basically tar and feather the poor guy.
Right.
Right. Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about that fluid resuscitation. We'll talk about Parkland's formula.
Mm-hmm.
So fluid resuscitation is important because you're going to lose a lot of fluid. Hypovolemia will cause shock, just like it would in a hemorrhage or a wound. So what we have to do is we have to figure out exactly how much fluid someone's going to need. And for that, we use something called Parkland's formula. And it's actually a lot simpler. It's funny. I forget it until I take PHTLS every single year. I don't take PHTLS every year. But I always forget it, even though it's simple. But here it is. It's 4 milliliters multiplied. Mark, you have your hand up?
Why are you putting an S on the end?
An S?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, it's the Parkland formula.
Oh, it must have been an autocorrect.
Because it's not named after a person.
Oh.
Sorry. Just an observation.
All right. Yeah, Parkland formula. Bullshit. I'm just joking. It's 4. You multiply that by the patient's weight in kilograms. And you multiply that by the body surface area that's burned, which, again, we'll talk about that later. So a 90-kilogram patient with a 30% body surface area burn would need about 11 liters. It comes down to 10,800 cc's of fluid over the next 24 hours. That's right. What the Parkland formula gets you. Now, you're going to give half of that in the first 8.
Right.
The remainder is going to go over.
So you have 5 liters in 8 hours.
We have 5.5 liters for
five
this guy.
5.5 liters.
Yeah.
That'd be 5.0. And then the rest over the next 16 hours.
Now, here's kind of things, some considerations for EMS when it comes to Parkland's formula. Parkland's formula, it's important, especially if you have a...
Go ahead. Keep saying it.
Parkland.
Go say it. Go ahead. No, say it again.
You know what? Fuck it.
Say it again.
Parkland's formula, especially when you have a longer transport. This might be more of a concern to you, but here's kind of the things you have to keep in mind. If you're in the field and you have Parkland's formula and you know you have to get 5.5 liters in over 8 hours, that might not matter to you because if your patient is – Jesus Christ. Because if your patient is going into shock due to hypovolemia, you're going to need to treat that shock. What you really shouldn't do is be like, oh, crap, someone's blood pressure is, 70. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, but I really don't want to screw up Parkland's formula. It's like, well, no. Parkland's.
It's named after a hospital.
I'm just fucking with you.
I know. Well, you look me right in the eye every time you say it, so I know you're screwing with me.
I look you in the eye all the time.
That's a good point.
Anyway, I got a story about that. Anyway, so.
You want me to cry every time you say it?
It does something for me. Anyway.
I'll say it. No.
Parkland formula. It just sounds weird. I want to say Parkland's. I feel better about it.
Why?
Because.
It's incorrect.
But it's America.
But it wasn't invented by Dr. Parkland.
I don't give a shit.
It was invented by Dr. Baxter.
Well, it was said by Dr. Fingston.
At Parkland Hospital.
All right. So, Parkland formula.
You could go with Baxter's formula.
We're just confusing people. All right. You know, I'm back on track. I am back on track. I'm not. Right. So...
So, 90-kilogram patient. We already did that.
So, what we're doing, though, what I want you to do, though, is if you're in the field, remember, you're going to be treating shock as well. And what you shouldn't do is withhold fluid from a shocky patient to maintain Parkland formula.
No. Patient treatment's always priority.
Absolutely. And that's where you're going to end up most of the time in these severe burn patients. What's more important in this case is just keep track of exactly how much fluid you gave.
Right. If you have a long transport and you give four liters of fluid,
yeah,
they'll just break up the other 4 liters. Or if it's an 8 liter first 8 hours, they'll just break up the other 4 liters over the next 7 hours.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah. I mean, they'll just slow down what they give after that.
Yeah. Parkland formula just says this much by 8 hours. It doesn't say.
Baxter's or formula.
It doesn't say exactly how that's going to go in. So you got to remember, treat the patient's blood pressure like you would any shock patient and then move on. But Parkland formula does play a good role. And you do need to make sure that you are keeping track so the receiving hospital team kind of knows where they're at.
Right.
So there are some other warnings with fluid, though, however. So let's say you have a patient, maybe they're not hypotensive, but they do have a pretty good burn, and you are doing the Parkland formula. Be careful in patients that have problems like congestive heart failure or problems with pedal or pulmonary edema, which is where fluid third spaces out of the blood vessels and gets into places where it don't belong, like the lungs. Adding a bunch of fluid to these patients and not keeping track, you can drown them. Literally, you'll be pushing fluid into the lungs. So keep monitoring things like lung sounds, because you might cause a medical problem that's unrelated to the burn. All right, so we're going to move on to surface area. So we've talked about surface area for a while, and basically the severity of a burn is the thickness of it. Essentially, it's the thickness of it multiplied by its surface area. We've talked about this in several cases where we talked about, for example, partial thickness burns. If they're small enough, they're no big deal.
Right.
In some cases, they really don't even require a visit to a physician or a hospital, though please don't take our word for it. Take your physician's word for it. Mm-hmm. If it's small enough. But if that area increases, the same thickness burn becomes a problem. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple ways. There's two main ways that I've used over time to really determine the extent of a burn. And the biggest one, the easiest one for me to remember, is the rule of nines. And that is where the body is divided into several sections, and that section is either 9% or divisible by 9, which is 18. So, for example, your legs are big. Each leg, 18% total surface area.
From the brain's 1%.
Your genitalia is 1%. Right. I mean, your genitalia is 1%.
Not divisible by 9.
Okay, so that... You know what? I'm actually glad you say that, because I think people understand why I hate you now.
I think people. Hey.
People are like.
Now people understand why everybody hates me. Okay, don't limit yourself. You're not alone in this. Okay.
So your abdomen and your chest is 18%. Your back is another. No, 18% to abdomen and chest together.
Okay.
Yeah, just that whole front side, and your whole back is another 18%. Each arm is 9%. That includes the hands. Each leg is 18%. That includes the feet. Now, when you get to kids, it gets a little bit different. Here's my advice for children.
How much is a head?
A head in the kids is 12%.
Adults?
9, because the ratio is different.
Okay. A
bigger head, bigger body to head ratio.
Yeah, kids got big heads.
Yeah. In infants, head's 18%. So the thing about kids, though, is they don't really follow the rule of nines very well at all. For example, in a toddler or prepubescent child, you have 16.5% per leg. Mm-hmm. In infants, you're talking 13.5%. Here's the thing. When it comes to kids, do yourself a favor and familiarize yourself. If this is something you're going to be doing and you're in the EMS system, familiarize yourself with your pediatric guide and make sure your agency has one that it regularly uses and keeps updated.
Do you know why the legs and everything are so much off from an adult?
Well, just kind of looking, they're just a different proportion. I mean,
well, they are, but also it's because they're full. They're puffier. They have more adipose tissue. They have more fat, and so that the actual surface area, because of the rolls, will actually affect those numbers.
Well, the legs are actually less on kids, less percentage than adults.
But they have like pudgy arms, and they have like a lot more body fat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So.
So another way is the palm size method. That's basically you just use the patient's palm. A palm is 1%. So if you're like, hey, that's about three of this guy's palms. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Just grab their hand.
Yeah. Just start touching their burn with it. And then they'll be fine. So you can use the palm. And that's going to be better for smaller burns.
Right.
You know, you can really kind of, or like where you have a part of a chest that's burnt, something like that. That'd be good for. Obviously, the burn's too big. That's a lot of palms to try and keep track of.
Right. Now, have you ever just eyeballed it?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. That's fine. But I'm also...
it's about 18%.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, I've been 16%. Pretty familiar with the rule of nines for a while. And that's and that's why I like the rule of nines. It's a good eyeballer.
Right. Like, since childhood?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it came out. I was born in Parkland Hospital, so...
By Dr. Baxter?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what he told me? He goes, Little Quissy Poo, you can call Parkland's formula whatever you want.
Oh, so you got permission from the man, did
yeah,
you?
Yeah, okay. I did. Yeah, me and Bax go way back.
DB. So, location. We're not talking about the location at which you got burned. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I was in the garage or I was in the backyard.
No.
That location, a little less important.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're talking about.
I mean, it's important so we can find you, but.
Right. Location also impacts the severity of the burn. Well, it affects their quality of life. So a large burn on your upper arm or on your chest, yes. Well, you know, if it's not circumferential or full thickness or whatever, not going to impact your overall quality of life. But we touched on earlier that your hands, your feet getting burned, genitalia, your facial burns, stuff like that, burns to the airway specifically. Your nice favorite? I was smoking with my cannula on.
Yep. Oh, jeez.
Have you actually run somebody who's done that?
No.
Oh, okay, I have.
Yeah. How about this? I have run on a patient who has done it, but that wasn't the point of the call. This is something he did in the past.
Oh. I've done it. They rolled out of their care facility, their skilled nursing facility, on there, and they forgot to take their oxygen off and lit up a cigarette, and it blew the cannula out of their nose, and they had burns all around their nair, and their mustache was burned and stuff like that.
Damn.
So.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah, and here's the thing is, see, we talked about those different areas. Like, so for example, so in our area, if any patient has a burn greater than 15% of their body, or if it's a full thickness burn greater than 5%, they automatically are taken to a local burn center.
Right.
No matter what. However, if they have a burn that's less than that, but it's on the hands, feet, genitalia, face, or airway, or if it's an electrical burn, we'll talk about the reason why here in a little bit, they will also go immediately to the burn center. So that's where we're actually going to wrap up with those different burn types, because how you get burned matters.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, you know, heat is heat. But that being said, the very first burn type I'm going to talk about is direct heat. So this is a burn that occurs from a direct source of heat, and it's the most common type of burn that we encounter. It's anything from scalding hot water to open flame.
Oil.
Oil.
Hot oil on a stove.
Hot oil. Hot pavement.
Yes.
So I want to talk about that one really quick. There's a common story a lot of people know about where paramedics got into a scuffle with some guy. And they pinned him to the ground, and the guy started burning because they were in Vegas.
It was actually on a TV show.
Yeah.
Called Paramedics.
But there's another scenario that...
Real quick, on that instance, it's because the guy came in the pet driver's side door at his partner.
Oh, yeah. No.
It wasn't like they were just bored on post and decided to thump some guy in a parking lot.
Motherfucker had it coming. That guy made some poor life decisions that resulted in his injuries.
Yeah, he came in and it was a male and female, and he came in the driver's side, opened the door, started assaulting the female.
Yeah.
And what they did is he pulled him out, took him to the ground, restrained him until they could secure him properly. And during that time on hot pavement, he got a burn from the pavement.
Yeah. So one of the other things to consider, though, is you're on, for example, trauma call. And you have someone who is unconscious lying on the ground in a freeway, because that's where a lot of trauma happens. Mm-hmm. You got to watch out. They could be burning there, and they're unconscious, and they are not aware or able to protect themselves from that burn.
Oh, yeah.
So, because one of the big things, one of the first steps to treating a burn is removing the burning source.
Right.
Removing them from the burning source, if you can safely, and you have the PPE to do that. Obviously, if it's a burning house, and don't run in there and be like, Mom, I'm going to save them.
I mean, in Oklahoma, where I used to work, and it has been warm enough here a couple times to do it.
Oklahoma, where the winds go sweeping down the plains. What's the rest?
If you don't know, I can't tell you.
Oh, sorry.
No, we would actually cook eggs on the sidewalks.
Nice.
We did on post. We'd go in and buy like a half dozen of eggs and then just cook them. Just crack them and cook them right there on the sidewalk.
For any police that are listening, that is littering.
And, no, because it's biodegradable.
Doesn't matter.
It does.
No, it does not.
If it's biodegradable, it's not littering.
That's not true.
Because it is true.
I think it's not true.
You're wrong.
No, you're wrong.
Prove me right.
Not gonna be right because that would. Anyway, so let's talk about radiation.
Okay, Google. Just kidding.
Fuck off, Google. So most commonly, this is UV radiation causing a sunburn. However, some other types of radiations burns that occur from ionizing radiation, such as beta burns from nuclear fallout. Kind of went bigger, went home with that one. For example, the Chernobyl disaster had several victims of radiation burns that were not immediately burned. For example, firefighters that were drenched in irradiated water developed severe and lethal burns hours later.
Well, the radiation just affects the body fundamentally differently than the heat.
Yeah.
It's actual damage, cellular level damage over time.
Yeah. No, 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 wrong. UV radiation from the sun, that is a form of radiation, and that makes sense. We can all get our heads around that.
We're talking about, like, burning yourself on a fire or...
Yeah.
Like, if you're at a family get-together and you have been drinking.
Yeah.
And you fall forward into a fire and get burns on your hand.
Mm-hmm.
May have happened to a cousin of mine.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. That happens. But anyway, so here's the crazy thing. So what ended up happening is hours later, after the firefighters were done... with firefighting, they started developing full thickness burns just appearing on their body, anywhere from 11 to 50%.
Yeah.
They died.
And it'll be in random areas too. It's not like just the area that was exposed.
They all died. In fact, the hospital in Pripyat, which is the town where Chernobyl was, if you go down in there, which of course it's all cordoned off, like you can't just go waltzing into Pripyat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can parts of it, but not downtown. But anyway, in the hospital, the firefighter turnouts are still there and still too heavily irradiated to really go near. They had some people in radiation suits. You can find videos. People going in radiation suits down there, and they just kind of do readings off of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the firefighter turnouts. They put the Geiger counter next to it. He's like, yeah, this is if you were to put these on, that'd be a near lethal dose still.
So why is it?
I have no idea. In fact, I put exactly why I don't know that, that is. My last note for this paragraph is, I'm not a fucking scientist, so don't ask me exactly why.
What you know is it's going to prompt me to ask you why. Why would you put something in like that?
For this moment. Okay.
So next one's going to be electrical burns. Electrical burns occur whenever a significant amount of electricity travels through the patient's tissue. Now, the problem with this is, one of the main problems with this is that you don't necessarily see the burn.
Absolutely.
The main danger is that isn't necessarily the site of the electrical contact, because you will, if it's significant enough, you'll have an input and an output point.
Yeah.
Where the electricity has gone in and traveled through your body. Mm-hmm. So electricity will constantly search for the grounding, meaning it will travel through the patient until it finds it. So a patient who is in contact has a contact point on their finger may have an internal burn that goes through their body. Now, electricity travels path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. What's the path of least resistance through your body? Mm. Your vasculature.
Oh, cool.
Because it's liquid.
Yeah, well, thankfully vasculature doesn't go anywhere important.
Right. Or it's not all over, and yeah. It's not important to use. You know, it's a secondary system. So the vasculature is going to be all your veins and your arteries.
Yeah.
And it goes through your heart. It could go through your lungs at that point. you have a very small-looking burn on a finger. Mm-hmm. And you have another small looking burn on the other finger or the foot or mm-hmm. something like that. But the problem is that the burns that have gone through your body.
Yeah.
Is where you're going to have your
head. Right through your heart.
Right through your heart. It can cause electrical disruption in your heart.
Yeah.
It can cause VFib, VTAC. It can cause ectopy.
Just plain to burn it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, although I guess medium rare heart is good for dinner.
Right.
But exactly. Not in your body.
No.
So,
quick touch on lightning. So lightning can have the same effect with burns that you can't see, but has one additional problem. Often a lightning strike will paralyze your diaphragm, making it impossible for them to breathe. The paralysis is temporary, but it can last long enough to cause severe hypoxia and or death.
Been on a lightning strike person?
Me? Never.
I've had two. They're both in Oklahoma.
Oh.
The first one, the guy was mowing his lawn. The storm, because in Oklahoma you would have...
A lawn?
A lawn, yes.
And a lawnmower.
You would have very swift moving, short acting storms.
Wow.
So it would be 95 degrees, sunshiny day, and you can literally see, and I'm sure it's not just Oklahoma, I think in the Midwest this is probably pretty common, you'll see a line of clouds come across the sky. I mean, definitive line of clouds right across the sky. It'll come through, you'll have this violent electrical storm and rainstorm. Mm-hmm. They call them either gully washers or toad stranglers.
No.
And these are the storms that you'd have flash flooding from.
Yeah.
Because it rained just so much in a short period of time. It would flood everything around there. And then 25 minutes later, it's bright blue sky again. So this guy was out mowing his lawn, saw the storm coming, saw that it was fairly electrical because you could hear the thunder, mm-hmm. figured he could beat the storm and get his lawn finished before the storm got there. Was just finishing up and trying to get back to the garage when a lightning bolt hit his lawnmower.
And you know, by the way, he's singing the entire time, like, yes, 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 yeah,
I got it. Zap.
Yeah.
And I will remember to this day, the biggest issue we had was his mom was pissed, called and complained on us.
Why?
Because we took him to a medical center that was not a Catholic hospital.
Oh, geez.
It was the only burn center in town. But this was in Tulsa. She wants to take him to St. John's.
Yeah.
Because he's a good Catholic boy. And we said, no, we're going to Hillcrest.
Yeah.
Because they were the burn center. That was the perfect place to take him. And she yelled at my partner all the way down there. Mm-hmm. She called and complained to the supervisors. Supervisors tried to explain why we did what we did.
Yeah.
No, they're actually trying to take... But yeah, because it wasn't a Catholic hospital.
He's going
to
be a dead Catholic boy.
Exactly.
If you take him there.
So yeah, lightning is actually a fairly interesting injury. Lightning shots.
Another source of burns? Friction.
Like the Native American burns you got as a kid from your bigger brother?
Yeah, absolutely. There's that, or the twisting of the arm, exactly. Yeah. You've got road rash. Crashing a motorcycle, get a lot of friction on there. And now that is not a burn in the sense that you necessarily, I mean, if you build up enough heat, sure. But it's not a burn in the sense that you necessarily have water that is being pulled from the tissue in a destructive way, but it does create a very, very similar problems in the sense that you do have a large removal of the upper layers of skin, and that causes fluid displacement. It causes exposure for infection. Mm-hmm. And if it burns down deep enough, you're not going to have skin that grows back. Well, skin grafts can be required.
Rope burn.
What's that?
Rope burn.
Rope burn. Yes, absolutely.
Which you do get the heat generation.
Yeah.
And the trauma stuff that you just spoke about.
Yeah. And so that is one of the kind of important things. So oftentimes those patients will be seen at burn centers because while not technically a burn.
Close enough.
Close enough. The treatments are going to be right in line.
Right.
And then finally, we're going to talk about chemicals really quick. And I'm going to tell you this. Fight Club might have lied to you. So here's the thing about chemicals.
We can talk about Fight Club?
Yeah, we can. Oh, crap. Is that the first or the second rule?
First rule of Fight Club is you can't talk. Nobody talks about Fight Club.
What's the second rule?
Don't talk about not talking about Fight Club. I've never seen the movie.
Oh, you haven't? Uh-huh. Oh, the first second rule are the same.
Have you seen the new Spider-Man movie, Into the Spider-Verse?
I took my son to see it, yeah.
Yeah, great movie.
Well, it's actually kind of funny. I took my son to see it, and I was thinking, I'm like, oh, this would be a good kind of cartoon movie. I'm like, this is a cartoon that takes itself pretty seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it was good.
Won the Golden Globe for animated feature.
Best good. I should have.
Yeah.
Should've. It was funny.
It was good. It was funny. It was entertaining. It was, yeah.
Are those sweatpants? Yes. Yes, they are.
Can you say that? I mean, legally?
Yeah, exactly. That was one of my favorite parts. I mean, legally, yeah. chemical burns.
Oh, sorry, real quick.
Yeah.
Last cameo by Stan Lee.
Yeah.
In that one.
Sad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any Hoosiers.
Yeah.
Before I cry.
Yeah. So, fucking A. Chemicals. So, chemicals can cause burns. Mm-hmm. They do this by interacting with water in your tissue. They do this by changing the pH of your tissue, which then interacts with water in your tissue. And so it's very, very important to know about the chemical that you're using. Here's the problem with chemicals. Dousing them with water does not always help.
Well, if they're reacting with water,
it can make it worse.
So
you can actually make this worse.
I know that, in recent wars, one of the things they've had a problem with are magnesium bullets.
Yeah. Anyway.
They actually would have to cover them with petroleum jelly while they were trying to get them out of the tissue.
Yeah.
To cut off the air supply.
Right. And so I believe like when they were putting there's tracer rounds for a while that would use white phosphorus. Mm-hmm. And that would cause a similar problem.
Right.
Here's the other thing, though, is a lot of times you may believe if you have an acidic compound, the best way to stop that burn is going to be to neutralize it with a basic compound. This may be true, but it depends on the chemical. Because here's one of the other problems, too, is sometimes when you combine an acid and a base, one of the, yes, the pH will ultimately neutralize, but one of the...
You can have an exothermic reaction.
Absolutely. Which an exothermic reaction is... An exothermic reaction is heat.
Right.
And so basically you make more heat. You can also cause, if you're not careful, you might cause some sort of off-gassing, and now you're breathing in toxic fumes. So here's the thing. Whenever you're working with a chemical that could potentially burn you, you need to know about that chemical. Because I will tell you this much. When your first responders get there, they're not going to do anything until they know about that chemical. And if you're sitting there like, it is this, this is the MDS sheet, which is Material Data Safety?
MSDS.
MSDS. Material Safety Data Sheet. All right, yeah. The MSDS sheet. Yeah, this is the MSDS sheet. That's going to help them a lot. So
knowing what it is, because a lot of your fire departments will have access to a very large computer base also. Mm-hmm. And
they have hazmat teams that this is what they do. Mm-hmm. And so the other thing to also...
And they're very humble about it, too.
and the other thing also to consider, too, is some of these chemicals, there's a secondary problem. Not only will they burn through the skin, but once they enter the bloodstream, they are then toxic. Mm-hmm. And so antidotes may be required as well.
Right.
So anyway, that is all I have on burns.
We didn't even talk about a sick burn at a rap battle.
No, we didn't. Mm. Are we going to rap battle really quick?
Toast. No?
Oh.
That's all I got, man.
God, that's it, yeah.
That's good. So
close it out.
Thank you all for listening. My name's Mark. God, we're smart, Frankum. And that is Chris.
Wait, are you doing two nickname sets?
No, I'm going to finish one out this time. I was going to, but you interrupted me, so you don't get a nickname now.
Oh, fuck.
In fact, that was your nickname, Chris.
Don't interrupt me. You don't get a nickname now.
Fingston. we're on the social media. We're on medical. We're at MedSide Stuff on Twitter. Mm-hmm. We're at Medical Stuff Number 52 on Instagram.
Medical. You don't have to write the word number or pound. Just Medical Stuff 52. Because I don't want someone writing Medical Stuff Number 52 in.
Did I say number?
Yeah, you did.
Oh. Medical Stuff 52 on Instagram, and we're at Medical Stuff on Facebook. The Twitter handle is at MedSideStuff, MedSideStuff.
Mm-hmm. If you need to email us, you can email us at MedSideStuff@yahoo.com.
Yeah, thank you for listening as always. Please tune in next week. Tell all your friends about us and
toast.